Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand.
The variety pack that is truly, truly life and politics. Honestly, the big news for me personally is I did solve a mystery. Mystery was, why do I have all of these insanely bizarre rips in my hair? Like split ends, but like not even split ends. I'm like, and you know, I always have that weird like alfalfa one in the back that's like pretty crazy and gets out of hand. Like, please look at our repro freedom for all videos from like circa March, because it is its own character in the back of my headband. But it's like all over. And I realized,
when was the last time you got a haircut?
Oh, well, that's a whole other topic.
Well, that's your answer, Samantha.
Well, no, it really, well, that part is, but that wasn't really it. My hair keeps getting caught in this thing, part of my phone, the pop socket. Like, there's like a little crease in here.
And when it's like on your ear?
No, like I'll be like going down to like grab something and I'm like holding my phone, because my hair's so long, it just gets tangled in it and then it just rips.
Crazy.
Crazy.
What your own product can do to you. But
it's really disturbing. And the other thing that I find disturbing is the fact that we don't know if Jack Schlottelberg or whatever the hell his last name is single or not.
I think that he is, just from what I've heard out on these streets, but I cannot confirm.
Cannot confirm, cannot
deny. Are you wondering for personal reasons?
Well, you know, I'm curious. It has crossed my brain, but
do we think he's fully straight?
I do.
Okay.
I think he just has a personality.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Although I will say, like, so I was watching this video of him, came up on our feed. Don't be thinking I'm like creepy crazy. And he was wearing a cheese hat, like in Wisconsin, and he was making a lot of dad jokes, you know, really rolling through, you know, like, let's mozzarella something about this. Like, I don't know if he said that one, but like that type of thing. And I was like, he might be the more confident, wealthier version, man version of me. And
wow,
I can't date myself.
So. Wow, folks. That was a big, bold statement from Samantha Cantor here. You heard it here first. You heard it here first. She thinks she is the female version of Jack Schlossberg. What?
Okay.
The audacity. She does have the audacity of a white man. So that is that's what I'm gathering from that statement.
Honestly, I need to have that audacity like way more often.
I know.
Like, don't really gather it into something and like throw it at something.
You have it sometimes, but I get, as a woman, it's hard to be consistent. But what white men have over us is the consistency for the audacity.
For sure. I think my best moments of audacity are like when I don't even realize that I am like having the audacity. You know what I mean? Because it's
right. Not until I come in and, you know, just really ground you in the moment.
What you guys don't realize is like Maddie and I are a necessary duo on a call, because literally I will just yabber, 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 and I will talk myself like out of a deal or something. And then Maddie will like ask, well, like, first of all, shut me up. And second of all, she'll also like ask a question that, ironically, as much as I'm yap, yap, yapping, I'm like scared to ask the person. So then we actually get the information we should be like getting, which is like great, where I'm like not having the audacity enough. And Maddie's just being a normal person, but having the audacity and the scale of like this current society.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
Yeah.
yeah, that sounds right to me. But nonetheless, you know who certainly will have a toxic amount of audacity is JD Vance tomorrow on the VP debate stage, because that's upcoming. And for the presidential debate, we did wait and do our little intro right after live reactions, but we're not doing that for this VP debate for logistical reasons, really. But I don't know. How are you feeling? What are you hearing?
You know what? It's funny because obviously this has been a topic on both of our minds and one that we've both been asked about a ton in the last, I feel like, 2 weeks. And I really don't have a distinct feeling on how it's going to go. I feel like I was really nervous going into the presidential, like, Kamala's a fucking boss. I knew she was going to handle some shit. And that shit being that, like,
I wasn't worried.
No. But I just was more of a scale of how good is this going to be? Is this going to be like the slam dunk, iconic everything that it was? Or is this just going to be like, okay, we got through it. It was good. It was solid. But like, I don't feel like it really helped or whatever. Versus this debate.
Well, it's just like, first of all, I know this is going to come out on Wednesday and people have already seen it. So our prior takes are going to be like null and void at that point. But I don't know whether J.D. Vance is going to be like a good or a bad debater. He's a lawyer, so he could kind of like have that in the moment, snappy, witty, like debating skill.
Really stupid lawyers, though. So
totally, of course. But and then there's, but you know, he just spews bullshit all the time. I think it's just going to be like the heinousness of which he says, not where like with Trump, where it's like the heinousness of which he says, but then also how he says it. You know, like J.D. Vance just can kind of package it a little bit better, potentially, in terms of just like truly being able to get a sentence out. Like, that's what I'm talking about. The bar is very low. But Walls, I mean, I have a lot of confidence in him. I haven't seen him in like a, even a town hall or like a live debate type setting to see if he can really like just fire off his stats and his figures. But I don't know. We'll see. That is like, that is the question and the wonders that I have.
Yeah. Many questions, very few answers. Look, it's just like a different context. We've got two older white guys. I mean, I guess.
Well, they're both middle-aged pretty much kind of like.
Oh, right. I always forget. Walls
looks older than he is. He's just a little gray. So but he's not that old. And then, like, J.D. Vance is what? He's, like, 40 in his 40s. And I think Tim might be in his late 50s or early 60s. So, still, like, they're both, like, middle-age-ish. They're not end of life like Donald Trump. But so I don't have any like worries in terms of their competency in that regard, but
it'll be an interesting one. It's really, it's giving wait and see, which is what we will
do. We have to do.
We do what we have to do at this podcast. Okay. Like I've got nothing else to say after that.
Boom.
And then we really are in this crazy home stretch. Like it freaks me out because I keep having things added to my calendar, whether like work or social, whatever it is. And I'm looking at those like late October dates as they're getting like added to the calendar. And the sooner we get to election day, like the more I like hurt palpitation.
I know. And it's like officially October when people are listening to this. And how are you feeling about this election right now?
Ooh. Tense.
I feel like everyone is asking me that. And it's just a really interesting time because the kind of honeymoon vibes of Kamala's announcement have died down, I would say. There's still like good vibes out there, but that really crazy honeymoon era we were in is, I think, over. And now it's really about like, okay, where are voters actually at? And you know, we just don't know that. Like, there's polls and polls are saying a bunch of different things as they do. And we've said on this podcast for years now, like, you know, we're not big poll girlies. You know, we just don't, they don't always resonate. And like, with my gut checks that I feel like have been right over the years. Sure. So you just never know. And this month, you know, we're just going to have to continue to gut check voters and see where people are at. But I really don't know that we will fully know or feel confident until a few days after the election when results really get firmed up.
I couldn't agree more. I wish I had like a better like, oh, we're slam dunk. I just don't. It's so crazy to me. And obviously, we're not the only people to say that. Like, how is it basically tied? That's crazy. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. We've got one man talking about his beautiful beach body and comparing it to Sleepy Joe's, followed by then saying that both the current president and future president, not wink, wink, nod, nod, are mentally impaired, which, what? Like, how? Like, it's crazy what we're
It could not be tied. It could be a blowout.
It could Kamala. Be.
I mean, I just love to reference back to 2022 because Red Good. Wave was like all anyone could talk about. You and I, you go back in the archives and see it for yourself, hear it for yourself. But
no, listen to it.
No, there's just no fucking way. Yeah, it could be tied. Those polls could be right, but they could be very wrong. And it's just like, again, we just don't know.
We don't know. I think what's been interesting, at least from the conversational polling, not the like, oh, it's, you know, 50-49, blah, blah, blah. Like the very much like people on, you know, reporters on the streets, like asking voters, like, what are those issues that are really, you know, pushing you? And I feel like, and this is just feeling, right, that the economy has come up so much more.
Oh, yeah. It's the most
than I would have realized. And I think part of it, this is like a self-learning moment, is like I think of, and maybe this is actually a little bit of like a critique of how things get messaged out as well, is when I think of like the economy, think of like the stock market and like employment numbers and things of that nature. But what that like doesn't account for, which again is the critique in the messaging, is like, well, someone is employed, but they're employed in three jobs to like pay their rent. Doesn't like account for, you know, being able to pay rent, your groceries. I mean, obviously it does. But when I think of economy, like I think of like this like Wall Street-esque, you know, like description. And so then when I hear people say the economy, like I know I'm smart enough to like understand their translation of it. But just it's so interesting to me because at like the first jump, I'm like, oh, we're looking at the stock like numbers. You're like 16.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know? I mean, it's all about how people feel. And when people still go to the grocery store, to the gas station, or go to find a new apartment or buy a house, like things are way too fucking expensive. And it's not about macroeconomic measures. It's just, again, how people feel in their day to day. And I actually think that the Harris-Walz campaign has done a good job of messaging that, of being like, you know, the opportunity economy and also like painting out the vision of like helping people with these higher prices, coming after price gouging. I think they are doing a good job at like speaking to the economic issues that actually voters care about and what they're actually feeling on a day to day versus like, yeah, the stock market or GDP or all of these like macro economic things that we hear all the time, but they just, people don't care. It's like, why would you? Also, what do we say all the time? Like the stock market is astrology for men.
literally it is precisely that. And yeah, it is that feel, but I also think too, it's like, there's so many mechanisms at work. Like I was having this conversation actually with my dad the other day about how expensive, like I think we were at some coffee place and it was just, you know, like every iced coffee is like $8 now, like absurd. Like I drink black iced coffee, which is actually a topic we've talked about on this episode. So just like, that's your little hint, y'all. But of like how, oh my God, like if you pay in cash, it's less money. And then if you pay with your card, you know, you pay the higher price of it because the small businesses and businesses everywhere are getting banged out with these processing fees, which we do too, using, you know, I don't want to get sued, but using the various things that we use, we get banged out on processing fees, okay? And I was explaining that that is why we have an antitrust lawsuit against Visa and MasterCard right now, not us personally, the Department of Justice has that. It's just us two suing them. It's
We're
fine.
Just battling out with Visa, girl. Imagine. Can you imagine? Visa and MasterCard versus the girls.
You know, there's that clip and it's these two surfers. They went to some city council meeting and they're like,
oh, yes,
that's gnarly, bro. Like, and they like I don't know.
Yeah,
whatever
that
they were
would be us with all of our likes and like girly
like
pops.
It just doesn't care. Literally. But the larger point that I was trying to get to, which is like interesting, not interesting, whatever we want to qualify it, is just that like there are things like that that take time. Who knows where that's all going to land? But you have the federal government under a Biden-Harris administration going after monopolistic companies that are taking advantage of the current landscape. Whatever that result, we might not feel that for 5 years. If the result is like in a Trump administration, you bet your freaking pretty pennies that ain't happening.
Oh, I mean, just go look at like his vision. The contrast is just more tax breaks for corporations and the ultra wealthy and rolling back regulations and things that we need in place so corporations don't do terrible shit to everyday people. And also, like, this is a very important civic lesson of like, yeah, we don't feel economic policies from a president until years later. Trump gave major, major tax cuts to corporations and ultra wealthy people. And it has been proven now to be responsible for like 50% of the inflation and price gouging that we're seeing. So it's just like, and people, and a lot of people who are like, I think I have to go for Trump because of economic things. It's like, whatever you're feeling right now is actually like in large part due to some of his policies. I think we cannot sleep on the fact we also had a fucking global pandemic. And I think we're still feeling that. But he also had tax plans that were extremely damaging to everyday Americans, but extremely helpful to corporations and rich people. And he only has the plan to continue that if he is reelected. So that is something we have to tell our people.
We do. And I also want to add another footnote to this context of things in thinking about like what Trump would defund. And as we come off of this really horrendous, devastating hurricane that has truly wiped towns off the earth and is horrendous, I cannot get over seeing some of this footage. Some of the resources, the key resources like FEMA, which is on the ground now trying to help people, Project 2025 would defund that. NOAA like helps predict storms and figures out, you know, where those paths are going to be. Defunded, got the axe. Like that's the type of stuff that's going to happen in a Trump administration. What I never understand about some of this stuff, and I was thinking about this today with so many of these like deregulatory parts of Project 2025, it's like, this stuff impacts rich people too. Like, I really don't understand. Like, you can, you know, escape to a few little oases at a certain point. Like, you pollute the air enough, you pollute the water enough, it's going to find you. So I really, really don't get, like, these insane plans. It's more, I understand greed. I understand it gets people. But, like, there's a level to it where it's like, it's going to kill you too.
I know.
Like, congrats and on the that's at 25. Like I don't like.
Yeah. No, it's bad. And of course, like if there's a Republican who's being stubborn and, you know, will only vote for Trump and he could literally go shoot their daughter and they wouldn't care. Like, you know, they basically are like, yeah, it's less government. That's what we want. It's like, oh my God, kill myself. So.
Wait, I got another freaking footnote. Like literally mini footnotes tonight. That sounds so weird. I'm gonna like, please strike that from the record. Regardless, one of the good news items in this week's GovHub was /aka the Good News Bears section was related to space flight regulation. It's a bipartisan piece of legislation that was signed into law by Biden. Read it because I'm not gonna be able to regurgitate explaining it. However, the point is it's regulation. It's adding regulation, and it was introduced by a Republican senator, one of the two Republican senators from Missouri. Okay. It's his first piece of legislation signed into law. I read the whole press release. I'll tell you that. Okay. What? Literally a Republican regulating.
Sure. Yeah. Speaking of the Senate, should we segue into introducing our guest? Because we have a candidate coming on today, folks, that is in a very crucial race.
Wow. She came for that segue. Hopped right on that train and went, whoop, boom, we're Amtrak. Well, as we hop off this train and into this next part of the episode.
Nice. Wow. Nice.
That was even, that was just.
Just keep them going. Keep the segues. Like, yeah.
Hold on. Okay. Anyways, moving into the interview portion of this episode, we have County Executive Angela Alsobrooks. She is running for U.S. Senate seat in Maryland. She's actually running against the former governor who is Trump endorsed, yet says he won't vote for Trump. He's playing messy. Some funky line. Very messy. He's saying, oh, I shouldn't be a senator. I should be a Real Housewives of Potomac.
Potomac, oh. For sure. Obviously.
Yeah. So nonetheless, and I did realize we did forget to ask her. She has a favorite Potomac housewife, but.
Next time. When she's a senator.
Exactly. And we'll have her back on. But in the meantime, without further ado, here is County Executive Alsobrooks. All right. Angela Alsobrooks, welcome to Girl on the Gov. We are so excited to have, just a Senate candidate on the show in a really important state. And to jump right into things, can you tell us a little bit about your race, what you're running for, obviously Senate, but in the context, of this 2024 election and just really what made you decide, I'm jumping into this one. Like, this is the moment.
Yeah. You know, what an exciting time it is. First of all, thank you for having me on this show. I can tell you that this election is literally one of the most important of my lifetime. And I've been in many, many elections. I've been in public service since 1997. So this has been a long time. I started as a domestic violence prosecutor and have just really fallen in love with the work of defending and protecting our families. And this election in particular, I'm also the mother of a 19-year-old daughter. And so the idea and the I think, collective sense that this election will determine the future is one that has me really inspired in ways that, that I see reflected all across our state. Fighting for the reproductive freedoms of my own daughter, who I recognize now has fewer rights than her mother and grandmother, knowing that we are passing along to our children a series of burdens, the burden of gun violence, the burden of being concerned about our environment, the burden of not knowing about economic opportunities for their generation, affordable housing. So these are many of the issues that I think are important to families all across the state. And so it's a real honor for me to be able to fight for these issues, not just for Marylanders, but we recognize that as one of 100, you fight for the whole country. And so it's a really important time. And I'm pumped. I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think there's a lot of eyes on this race. And I'm curious, when you dive in deeper of what's on the line of this specific Senate seat, maybe it's for Maryland, but also just looking at a federal level too. I think there's this fight that we're all kind of joining in on. So I'm curious what that looks like too.
You know what? The road to the majority runs through Maryland. So holding the majority in the Senate is going to be vitally important. When we think about issues like reproductive freedom, we're very clear that the vision shared by the two parties couldn't be any more dissimilar than they are. It is the case that I believe that women should have the privacy and the freedom to make their own healthcare choices. But we recognize that this right is not one that the Republican Party has fought to secure. In fact, they have made this issue. They really wage war on the reproductive freedoms of women, not just abortion care, but contraception, IVF. And what we recognize is that that issue is one that will continue to come up, especially in the next administration. And having the 51st vote is going to be the difference between seeing a vote on codifying Roe or not. So this is a really important election, but the 51st vote is what this is about. Maryland will be one of the states that will decide the majority in the Senate. And whoever has the majority really controls the agenda. And that's why this race is one that is very hard fought. Everyone understands the stakes of it. It's a very high stakes election.
For sure. And zooming a little bit more into Maryland itself, I know we know a little bit about the lay of the land because we just have Wes Moore on. So we got some Maryland in the house. But I'm curious, as you're knocking doors and you're, chatting with voters, what are people chatting about? What are they saying they'd like to see happen, not just come November, but when you're elected, what sort of change do they want actually at their doorsteps?
You know, I can tell you across the state, and it's unsurprising, but it's almost unanimous. But the issue I hear most often is about economic opportunity, about affording the cost of living, about really making sure that we have a growing and secure middle class, that we are making the kinds of policy decisions that grow the middle class that allow the kind of equity and fairness across our state. So this is something that I've leaned into because as county executive, I prioritized it. I was a part of the delegation that led on bringing the FBI, national FBI headquarters to Maryland with 7,500 jobs, cybersecurity technology jobs will come. I fought to get infrastructure dollars back to the state, including in areas around transit, where we've gotten now, hundreds of millions of dollars invested in transit areas. So this is an issue that I hear across the state, growing jobs and income, investing in roads, bridges, internet, to make sure that businesses can thrive and that our kids can afford to buy homes and can afford the cost of living. But I've also heard that reproductive freedom is important. And by the way, this issue is not just important to women. You'd be surprised. I met with a group of veterans who talked to me about their daughters and granddaughters and how they were deeply concerned about abridging the rights of their daughters and granddaughters. And I've heard about gun violence, you know, safe communities that people are also sharing the feeling that I have. It's just awful. You know, when I was growing up, we did fire drills in school, which shows my age, you know, like middle-aged woman. But what we realize is that our kids are now preparing for active shooter drills. And this is a whole different world that we don't want to continue to pass on. This sad, sad reality that the number one way that children die in the United States is by gun violence. This is very sad. So these are some of the issues that I'm hearing about when I talk to voters. But I think priority at most kitchen tables is economic opportunity.
For sure. And I'm curious about the contrasts on all of that, too, of like, who are you running against and what that kind of landscape looks like?
Well, you know what? Mitch McConnell literally handpicked my opponent. He said that he was the top recruit of the year, a person who he thought would give the Republicans the best shot at gaining the majority in the Senate. My opponent is a person who just 2 years ago, for example, vetoed abortion legislation in the state. And when he was overridden, he doubled down and refused to release funding to train abortion care providers across the state until Governor Wes Moore came into office and released the funding. He's a person who vetoed legislation that would have created sensible waiting periods for long guns, and then outright refused to sign a ban on ghost guns in the state. When we think about, you know, the economy, you know, I am in favor of making sure that we have policies that favor the middle class, such as the permanent child tax credit, making sure that we are also doing the things that are necessary to fund small and local businesses. I'm a job creator. I've created in my administration more jobs than any jurisdiction in the state of Maryland, more businesses. But my opponent is a person who's vetoed, for example, $15 an hour paid in family medical leave, did not also the Prescription Drug Affordability Board that would allow people like my aging parents to have access to affordable prescription drugs. So I favor the middle class. I believe that he favors large corporations and these billionaires, the same ones who, by the way, are putting in just last week $18 million worth of negative attack ads attacking me because he's on their team. So we are on two totally different teams. Mine is Team Freedom and Team Future, and his, it wants to go backwards and wants to favor, you know, the billionaires and big corporations.
Yeah. Well, luckily also, besides that, obviously, you know, you have your platform. Mitch McConnell is really, you know, not hitting so well the last handful of election cycles. So his pick really just says everything and more, to say the least. But I'm curious, when, you know, you're also chatting with voters and you're telling them about your platform, is there one piece of that platform you really, you know, zero in on that you really want voters to know, like, this is an issue we're going to tackle together and this is how, you know, we're going to do it?
You know, again, I think it is about all of us recognizing that this election is literally about the future. And so when I say what is it we're going to focus in on, it is, for example, the Women's Health Protection Act that is codifying in federal law a woman's right to choose. That's going to be the first piece of legislation that I co-sponsor. It is, you know, insisting, again, that we protect the middle class as well as create growing opportunity for wealth throughout our country, that I'll be the kind of senator who can see every part of the state, that's from Mountain, Maryland, to, you know, to other parts of the state, to Charles County. It's making sure that we have equal opportunity across the state, and that I'm going to be a senator who sees every family and who finds value across the state. So I'm a senator for the whole state. And I think that's going to be really important, is not pitting parts of the state against each other. That's something that my opponent does. But I am not going to do that, to make sure that we have, you know, transit dollars in Baltimore and in other parts of the state, as well as, you know, the Eastern Shore. So I think it is in healthcare costs, keeping down the cost of healthcare. I hear that a lot resonating in especially rural parts of the state, where they have very little access to healthcare and to primary care physicians. So all of the issues, again, that are at the, that affect the lives and livelihood of the people I represent, are the issues that I will center most especially. People are really disgusted with the job that Donald Trump did in taking over our Supreme Court, appointing these absolutely horrible Supreme Court justices who have not only overturned Roe, but have just in every instance really sought to move us backwards, everything from Chevron decision to immunity. And again, another pointing out just another difference, my opponent, after Roe was overturned, went out and praised the Supreme Court justices that Donald Trump impaneled, said Donald Trump deserves credit for his accomplishments, including the, quote, incredible Supreme Court justices he nominated. The wider public doesn't agree with that. They are not incredible. Nothing incredible about them.
Right. For so many reasons, which we can probably take a whole podcast episode to go over, but we will spare everyone's ears. I'm curious too, like how you connect with voters on a personal level, and if there are things that like you like to show about yourself as a human to those that you speak to on the ground in Maryland, whether it's family or, you know, your favorite spots to eat or drink in Maryland. Like, what are those things for you that like you love to connect with voters on?
And what this, the part I have loved about all the work I've done, you know, I mentioned I started as a domestic violence prosecutor. I've been the county executive. I love people, and I think they sense it when they meet me. So I love meeting with the people of Maryland. I have been everywhere. I have had the most incredible interactions with people all across the state who I readily hug. They hug me. I mean, it is just, I have found the warmth has been incredible. So I love people. I think that people feel it when I meet them, because I think it's hard to represent people you don't know or understand. And it's likewise, you know, the case that people can tell authenticity from a million miles away. So I'm out and about, you know, with voters. And again, I see them wherever they are, because I am like them. I am the product, for example, of a middle class family. I'm the daughter of a receptionist and a car salesman. So I can relate to people, I think, of all walks of life, because they're just like me in so many regards. I'm a mother. I'm all of those things. And so just, you know, I just love being with the people I've done in, you know, drink coffee with them. I dance with them when I see them out. And I love dancing. You'll find there's no line dance I'm not interested in doing. So I've been out and about, and just, I've had a ball meeting people.
Fine.
You never know like who you're going to meet or what you're going to learn from people. And one thing that I actually do think says a lot about someone, which honestly people give me a lot of shit for, so I'll just like preface with that, is coffee orders. And you mentioned coffee. What is your go-to coffee order?
Okay, so you're going to laugh at me when I admit something here. So I was just drinking, I love coffee. So I was drinking regular coffee. You know what I have discovered is like the best thing ever is cappuccino with oat milk. Sounds very simple, but I look forward to it. I have it once a day, but it is the most delicious coffee. And I've found all over the state, when I travel now, I've found like all the coffee places, and I have had the best coffee, but cappuccino with an extra shot of espresso and oat milk. This is like the perfect thing. So
I am also a cappuccino girl. And you know what? I also do, if you add a little bit of honey, sounds kind of crazy to do coffee and honey, but it is like my favorite way to like sweeten up a coffee, and especially a cappuccino. So next time,
I didn't know this. You may find this is going to be a part of what happens today. This might be my new exciting thing, or that may be a part of my life before this day ends. It's a cappuccino with honey.
I love it. I'm on the West Coast, so I have yet to have my cappuccino this morning, and I'm very excited as well. So mixing my honey too, and think of you.
Okay, we've got coffee orders in hand. Now we also have to think about some of the other food things that happen in Maryland. I always think of like good crab cakes, other things that you've tried on the campaign trail. What are some of those highlights for someone that's going to, you know, visit Maryland? What are, you know, where are you pointing them?
Okay, so there are a couple of things. Well, you got to come to the National Harbor when you come to Maryland. Really, really beautiful. It's in, it's where I live here in Prince George's County. But there are no shortage of amazing places all across the state. You know, our Chesapeake Bay, of course, is like the center of our lives here. And so many beautiful, beautiful spaces, from Anne Arundel to places you'll see in Easton. I mean, we just have the most beautiful, it is a beautiful state. But you have to eat crabs. And I do want to just point out something. I was questioned very recently, like, well, how do we get full off the crabs? And I didn't realize the source of the misunderstanding. So here it is for everyone who's wondering about Marylanders and our crabs. Crabs are like an activity. It's a bonding thing. Okay, so we also usually will accompany the crabs, will have corn on the cob or like hush puppies or something, because those are the things that help you to get full. But the crab thing is not about like a, you know, like a four course meal sort of thing. It's like an activity, a fun thing that we bond over, because it's so funny that people were like, I can't get full off of those crabs. I'm like, oh, you think we're eating crabs like to get full? You do it because you pick crabs because it's fun. And we bond over it and have fun discussions. And so that's what I want people to know about. But you got to have crabs if you come to Maryland. And not just crab cakes, like crack a crab. You know, you got to get your hands in there and crack a crab. That's what I want people to know.
Right. That is so funny.
Smith Island cake. You can get some of that in Crestfield. I have it every year. It's also like this really incredible cake you have when you come to Maryland. Got to have some of his layers of chocolate.
Yum. All right. I'm also hungry now on top of wanting my coffee. That is really funny. I feel like that's something I've thought about a lot when I've eaten crab. I'm like, there's just such little bites, but it's so true. It's an activity. You got to get your hands dirty a little bit. Well, I'm curious too, like, as you are on the campaign trail and, you know, there's so many things and like tips and tricks I think you can give people for those who are running for office, from like, how do you survive? How do you like organize your time, and how to actually like really resonate with voters? So I don't know. I'm just generally curious about what your kind of like main advice is of like someone who is taking the leap and like running for office. If you have any secrets or how you kind of get through your days.
You know, there is one piece of advice I'd like to give. And it was actually something that was shared with me by my father. And what he said is, how you see something depends on where you sit. He said that so early on. What it means is, you know, people have different views, and those views are generally shaped by their life's experiences. But it's also a cautionary tale not to demonize people because they don't see things the way you see it. So it's stay open. You'd be surprised. I mean, I think the most important trait of any leader is to listen. And to go into spaces and to be willing to hear, like hear with your whole heart, yeah, what people are seeing, feeling, and experiencing. And when you do that, I think you will not only earn the respect and trust of the people, but it connects and bonds us, because we do really all want the same things for our families. But sometimes how we see it differs. And there are ways that we see it that are very honest differences. But at the end of it, I think when we listen and really stay focused on solutions, we'll solve many of the world's problems just by staying open. So I think I'd say stay open. Be open. I've gone to places across the state where I was instructed, to be honest with you, not to go. I was told I wouldn't be welcome there for one reason or another. And I've still gone. And I have met and connected with the most amazing people everywhere. So stay open. Go everywhere. And look for ways that we have things in common, because I promise you, when you find that, what it is that we all care about, you'll find more often than not, there's so much more that binds us than divides us.
Yes, I love that.
So true. That I really think has been like something we've all needed to get back to in like the last few years of realizing, again, same goals, maybe have different like vantage points as to like how to get there or, you know, how our views were shaped. And I think that's gotten a little lost in the sauce. I'm glad we're all sort of, you know, bringing that back to the forefront because it's super, super important. As we sort of wrap here for the people listening, we are literally in the home stretch before election. And that just blows my mind, first and foremost. But where can people get involved? How can people help support your campaign? What are all the places to plug?
So thank you both to Sam and Maddie for having me on this show today. And to all your listeners, you know what? Don't sit this one out. This election is literally going to decide the direction our country goes in. And this 51st seat, Maryland, is really central and critical to keeping the majority in the Senate and also to pushing an agenda that is about the future of our children and about their freedoms and about the quality of their lives. Angela, also books.com, please go to it. You know, we need all the support we can get. I am up against billionaires who have literally dropped millions and millions of dollars within the last week of trying to drown out that message and to buy a Senate seat. But we're not going to let that happen. So please fight with me. You know, get on social media, spread the word about the shared vision we have for the future. And we're going to win on November 5th. And it's going to be because of all of our collective efforts. So thank you so much to everyone. Let's go do it. We're almost there. And I couldn't be more excited about the future of our country.
Yes, we're almost there, guys. Final push. Yep. thank you so much.
All right. Thank you both so much.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.